Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe.
It is The Advertising Show with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe, being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show is a copyrighted Big Radio Midgets production. Jeremy Kent with us today, our European correspondent, and around the other side of the world, in this particular case, the lighted side of the world, we have Paul French joining us from Shanghai. Paul is a Shanghai-based editor and analyst. And he is also author of a few books, including a brand new one called A Fat China. You wonder what that's all about? We'll find out from Paul here in just a few moments as we roll into another advertising show. This last week we had part two of George Lois and had a lot of nice commentary on what George had to say. And he's always a great interview and a great opportunity to be a part of the ad show. And so we're glad you enjoyed that. And, of course, George always is very amenable to coming back and, spending some more time with us as well. So we'll have him back often as we roll into 2011 here at the Advertising Show. Brad, how are you doing?
Well, I'm doing great, thanks. And I want to also add to that, Ray, that the Twitter followers that came up with some wonderful questions that we followed along and made sure George responded to. We couldn't get to all of them. We had a huge outpouring, both from Twitter as well as our Facebook folks. And we appreciate your participation. We're going to let you participate in future interviews as well. But thank you for the great questions. So, and it was a great time with George. And by the way, I mentioned off the air, may as well mention on, Art and Copy, a film that George mentioned during his interview, was on PBS a few weeks ago and had the chance to view it. It's produced by The One Club out of New York, theoneclub.org. Mm-hmm. It's $25. I mean, if you can't find it somewhere online or through a rerun on PBS or somewhere else, pop for the $25. It's an hour and a half program, and I can't tell you enough great things about that film. It's a wonderful film. I know you've seen a few clips of it yourself, Ray.
Sure, it's out there as well, but it's best to get the original, obviously. That's the smartest thing to do. Yeah, it's funny, we're talking to Paul French today. His new book is called Fat China, How Expanding Waistlines Are Changing a Nation. It has a chubby little boy, Asian boy here on a fish. And it's a very catchy cover. But, you know, food is so much a part of what we consider to be an asset and a detriment to the advertising, almost a black eye in some cases. One article here from Adweek, it says, healthy eating is a hard sell. Why consumers are drawn to such items but rarely buy? And most of us would say, yeah, because they cost so doggone much. You know, it's easier almost to buy the junk food, and I'm talking about not necessarily from a Burger King or a McDonald's or something, but even at the store. You know, you're going to buy, you're going to eat healthy with, tilapia, or are you going for the frozen fish sticks that are about a quarter of the price? And basically, what they're saying here in the article is a few virtuous intentions are more broadly held than the wish to adopt a healthier diet. Hell, we all do that. Alas, a glance at the nation's waistline tells us that many consumers fail to carry through because, well, it costs a whole bunch of money. This is a Catalina Marketing report that they did. They say it's not as though consumers can't find the health-friendly foods. I mean, go to Whole Foods or go to Trader Joe's or something. They're there, or in your case, just go to the beach. It's there. But 72% agreed that the store they go to stocks a wide variety of healthful foods and beverages. They are less impressed, though, of the store's utility source of information and guidance on healthy eating, particularly among shoppers who have kids in the household. 50% of all respondents said their supermarket helps me make healthy food choices. That's not too bad. 35% of the parents said the store helps me make healthy food choices for the kids. But well under half said their store provides information on foods and beverages that manage specific health concerns. I cannot tell you how aggravating it is when I see my daughter or my wife come home with junk. It's like, why are we bringing this stuff? You know, I've got two young grandchildren as well. You know, please don't introduce this into their lives, into their diet. But unfortunately, this is more of the norm than I think that we'd like to take advantage of. So go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say it's a convenience. People get caught up in conveniences in the rat race, fast world we live in. And then also there's issues, as you point out, of cost. It would be interesting, I haven't seen any stats on it, to see if there has been a slowdown of purchases of organic produce and various other organic items because of the economic downturn in the U.S. And globally, for that matter. You would think that a lot of people would say, hey, my health comes first, and I'm going to still pop for the, you know, hormone-free milk or whatever the case may be. But, you know, I don't know.
Well, a good example of you. You moved away from a very stressful area and also from a very stressful type of diet and living. And as a result, you are probably – well, number one, you probably added 10 to 20 years to your life. But number two, you are probably in better shape now than if you were to go back 10 to 15 years and say, you know what, you're right, Ray. I mean, you have adopted that lifestyle, and that's a good thing to have done. But here in the good old United States, and obviously in other countries as well, there is a problem. And it's really interesting, too, as it relates to Paul's book. The concept of, you know, you think of China and you don't think of fat. You think of healthy. You think of long lives. You think of scenarios where people eat, you know, good stuff and they manage their weight and they're a lot better off. And I think a lot of this, if I'm not mistaken, is one of the Western influences, unfortunately, into that culture. And I think that's what Paul writes about as well. Hey, let's do this. Let's... I want to thank one of our sponsors, as you thank them. So let's go ahead and do that right now, and then we'll bring Paul on, and I'll tell you more about him. So go right ahead, Brad.
Yeah, well, it's been a wonderful relationship with Audible.com, and today's broadcast is brought to you by Audible.com, where you will find over 75,000 titles to choose from for your iPod or your MP3 player. Well, what am I saying, 75,000 titles? Well, we're talking about a free Audible.com offering of a free Audible book download, as well as a free 14-day trial to get you into seeing how it is to download audio onto your iPod or MP3 player. And they have a wonderful, huge number of books, New York Times bestsellers, arts and entertainment, fiction, nonfiction, all kinds of categories that you would expect to find at your local bookstore is available at audible.com. And you might be wondering, well, how do I get this free 14-day trial? Simply go to audiblepodcast.com/adshow. Again, that's audiblepodcast.com/adshow. And sign up for your free 14-day trial and also get a free audiobook download just by checking in with them and signing up. It's a great deal. Tell a friend about it as well. Again, audiblepodcast.com/adshow.
So we're giving something useful. Not a mug, not a t-shirt, not a hat. It is something that they can actually use, and I like that. It's very good. And, of course, we're very happy to have them as part of the advertising show as one of our sponsors. We've got our European correspondent, Jeremy Kent, headed our way right now, and that's going to happen on the advertising show. Let's listen.
Hello, and a very warm welcome to the European News Desk. I'm Jeremy Kent. Coming up, Alex Krotowski says marketers have broken the web, BlackBerry reaches out to younger consumers, and sky's the limit for News Corp. Social psychologist Dr. Alex Krotowski accused marketers of breaking the web. In her speech to the IAB Engage conference in London, she claimed that the increasing level of brand-related content is undermining the true ethos of what the web is supposed to be. According to Dr. Krotowski, brands should not actively seek to make online connections with consumers. Instead, brands should allow themselves to be found through a process of information discovery, because that's the way the founders of the web intended it. Krotowski suggests that advertisers should stop thinking about the service they deliver and then serving it on a plate to a target demographic. Instead, they should encourage serendipity and create information that consumers weren't expecting, so that they may go on a path of discovery that doesn't restrict them to being part of that demographic. She claims that the consumer needs to be challenged by random elements that will inspire new interactions with content. She insists that this is the next big idea to come out of the industry and that marketers will have to be braver than ever before. Certainly the first marketing director to place this in front of his board will have to be very brave indeed. Staying with a more traditional approach, BlackBerry is attempting to shed its corporate user image with a major new online campaign. The Live and Lost campaign sees a variety of music stars, including The Wanted, Professor Green and Example, attempting to get from one part of the UK to their gig in another part of the country. They must do it in just 5 days and using nothing more than $30 and their BlackBerry. The artists will have to seek help from their fans to complete the task, reaching out to them over social media and offering private gigs in exchange for food, shelter and transport. BlackBerry has responded well over recent years to the challenge posed by iPhone and more recently by those on the Android operating system. A stronger brand presence through TV advertising and sponsorship, along with the introduction of BlackBerry Messenger, has seen a strong take-up in the youth market. Now, contrary to public perception, Rupert Murdoch's News Corp doesn't own BSkyB, the company that in turn owns and operates satellite broadcaster Sky TV. News Corp currently has a 39% stake in BSkyB and has alerted the European Commission of its intention to purchase the remaining 61%. The EU must decide by the end of November whether or not it wishes to investigate the deal, and if it does, the investigation could take up to 4 months. At the same time, the British government has asked the UK regulator Ofcom to investigate on the grounds of cross-media ownership. From London, this is Jeremy Kent for The Advertising Show.
What a great and unique perspective we always get every week here at The Advertising Show from Jeremy Kent, our European correspondent here at The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth, our special guest out of Shanghai, where it's actually tomorrow. I think that's cool. Paul French is a Shanghai-based editor, author, and analyst. His own books include several histories, including A History of North Korea, a biography of Karl Crow, an American advertising agent who became a guru on doing business in Shanghai back in the 1930s. That would have been really cool. And a study of foreign journalists in China before 49, that is 1949, through the looking glass. He's also co-author of a study of China's changing energy needs called Oil and on Water, and an analysis of China's rising obesity problem and healthcare system. And the book is called Fat China. Here is what one person had to say about that. Duncan Hewitt said, while some people around the world agonize about the rapid spread of China's global influence, others within China are more worried about the spread of the country's waistlines, or at least they should be, according to this fascinating and exhaustively researched study by Paul French, also the co-author Matthew Crabb. By turns, colorful, witty, and alarming, this book provides fascinating insights into China's fast-changing society. And that is Duncan Hewitt, a Shanghai correspondent for Newsweek and an author of Getting Rich First, Life in a Changing China. So with that said, We are waking up this morning with Paul, and Paul, it is certainly a pleasure to have you here. Welcome to The Advertising Show.
Thank you very much for waking me up.
Yeah, well, thank you for joining us. We're honored to have you. We usually ask guests that are involved in tomorrow to check the newspaper for lottery numbers and let us know who won so we can sign up, but that's really never worked out. So we'll stay with this. First off, Paul, I understand that you are founder as well as chief China representative of Access Asia, which is an organization based out of Shanghai. Just by way of background, tell us a little bit about your role as chief China representative.
Well, we're just a company that sits here in China and has done for the last 15 years or so, trying to work out what's going on with the consumer here and trying to work out how that runs all the way through to retail sales. And you know, you guys are always talking about how the American consumer spends his dollar. We're just doing the same thing, trying to work out how the average Joe in China spends his renminbi, really.
Hmm. Well, you know, we're going to get into that, and hopefully by the end of today's interview, we'll have a better working knowledge of all that. I think there's a lot of misconceptions from reading your book, as well as some thoughts that do play out with regard to the Chinese consumer. In the introduction of your book, Paul, you say what China consumes will change the world. I found that to be quite a bold statement. Explain what you mean by this.
Well, you know, there's a saying among sort of finance analysts that if China's selling it, whatever it is, then the price will be cheap. And if China's buying it, whatever it is, then the price will be very expensive. And there's also a good joke, which is that, you know, the numbers are always so big in China. So if the Chinese were to start to eat sushi at the same rate as the Japanese, That'd be great if you could have a sushi business in China, but it'd be bad news for the world because there'd be no fish left in the ocean. I mean, it's you know, the sheer numbers alone always sort of affect things in China. And with more and more Chinese people having a bit of money in their pocket and also some leisure time to go out and spend it, it definitely is affecting, you know, the strategies of everyone from supermarket chains to fashion brands to the sneaker companies. I mean, just everyone is now finding that China is just becoming a component of their business.
Well, you know, obesity, as Ray mentioned earlier last segment, is certainly nothing unique to China. It's pretty much a global problem among all developed nations today. So I'm curious, Paul, with your working knowledge of the Chinese marketplace, is obesity an issue for all Chinese across the board, or can you identify specific groups or market segments of consumers that are struggling with obesity today in China?
Yeah, I mean, the obesity numbers, as they're sort of starting to pile on here, are almost exclusively urban. So this is not affecting the 700 or 800 million Chinese that still live in the countryside. It's really a city problem. But of course, Chinese cities are quite big. I find myself in a conversation the other day with someone from America talking about small Chinese cities, and you know, I suddenly realized that I was referring to cities with populations of 6 million and under, which is a bit ridiculous. Again, the numbers are always crazy here. So it's mostly an urban problem. It's also different to the obesity problem that sort of obsesses us in the United States and Western Europe and Australia and pretty much everywhere else in the developed world. It's a disease of the middle class. So it's actually the people with money, the people that are becoming affluent, who are displaying a propensity to obesity. Whereas I think in most Western societies, certainly in Europe and America, obesity at the moment tends to now be a problem that's affecting people lower down the social scale, if you like. It's no longer what it was in Victorian novels. You know, in Victorian novels, it was always the landowner that had terrible gout and was overweight. But now it's the sort of the person at the bottom of the scale. In China, it's very much this emerging new urban middle class that's suffering from obesity. So in that way, you know, the situation is slightly turned on its head from what we're used to.
And any particular demographic? Is it young people, middle-aged, older? Does it just run across the demographic cell cycle with regard to just mostly middle class, as you say, that are becoming affluent?
Yeah, no, I mean, it is a particularly alarming problem among children. Here in Shanghai, the school system is now saying that it's now, I think when I wrote the book, it was one in five children in the school system here were considered obese. It's now up to 1.5. So it's a particular problem with children, and that's a worry for the healthcare system because we're seeing a quite alarming rate of diabetes, type 2 diabetes, starting to emerge among young children as well. So unlike sort of America and Britain and other countries where we have an obesity problem, we're not so much kind of seeing fat families. We're still seeing to see the sort of thin parents and grandparents, but wandering around with a fairly chubby toddler, which is, again, perhaps slightly different.
The Advertising Show is Ray Shillings and Brad Forsythe. Brad, we're going to take a break here for just a moment. Being powered by Shipple.com, it's a platform called Tendency. Shipple has an incredible marketing website concept, and it might be something that would interest you as well. It's S-C-H-I-P-U-L.com. Ed and his crew do a great job for the Advertising Show here with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsythe. Back in just a moment with more. It's all about fat China. And the author of the book is Paul French, who will continue our conversation here in just a moment, and hope you can stick around.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsythe.
Never borrow money needlessly just when you must.
Ray and Brad on the Advertising Show with our special guest out of Shanghai. It is Paul French, the co-author of Fat China, How Expanding Waistlines Are Changing a Nation. I find it really intriguing, Paul, to think that we have, that you guys, at least over there, have a similar problem to what we have. And I wanted to find out, you know, there's a big Probably a roadblock here to helping solve this problem. And it's the fact that we advertise fat foods. We advertise unhealthy eating, and we're trying to gain control of that. So from China's standpoint, is it the same scenario where you've got those ads out there, whether it be a KFC or a McDonald's or something, where, you know, we're pushing the bad food toward the kids, and we're really not doing a good job of not doing that? Is that what's going on over there?
Well, yes, we do have exactly the same problem, except with even less sort of restrictions on advertising to children or advertising high fat, sugar, starch, salty foods than you do in America or there is in the European Union. So it's pretty much a free-for-all in the advertising market here, and pretty much any claim will do.
Oh. Truth in advertising, maybe not necessarily as truthful as it should be?
It's a little bit of a problem sometimes here. I mean, you know, we still regularly have adverts here, particularly because people, you know, you always have to remember in China, because of the one-child policy, there's this intense emphasis on children succeeding. There's no what we would call sort of second chance parenting here. You know, if your first kid's not too bright, hopefully the second one will be the one that gets to Harvard. There's only one chance here. So we still have lots of adverts for sort of vitamins and food products and everything that show a baby sort of eating something and then sort of, you know, pictures of Einstein popping up on the screen.
Very good.
You know, Paul, is it a misnomer for Americans to think, or really all Westerners to think, that it's really a simple matter of the Chinese becoming not only more fluent, as you've already pointed out, but it really is a matter of the penetration of the American diet and the availability of such in China? And if China didn't have access to a more Western diet, would the obesity problems not be there?
You know, there's a side of me that would have loved to have written a book that just got to make fun of and attack the junk food companies. But unfortunately, when you analyze it right down, it's not possible to say that. Now, certainly, the Western fast food companies are, you know, part of the problem rather than part of the solution. But they're not wholly to blame. One of the great misnomers that Chinese people and Westerners believe as well is that Chinese food is somehow intrinsically healthier, which is not true. I mean, historically, a lot of Chinese food is deep fried. A lot of Chinese food involves a lot of oil and so on. So Chinese food is not necessarily that much healthier for you anyway. The problem, which I think is why we've seen obesity hit in, you know, we're seeing obesity hit in countries with very strong, you know, traditional diets like India, like France, is that it's about affluence. It's about when you have money, you tend to consume more. And it's about Chinese middle-class people, anyway, consuming more of everything. And, of course, like all of us, unfortunately, leading sedentary lives, which mean we're eating a lot more and we're just not burning it off.
Well, I'm wondering where the opportunities are. You know, before we go any further, you know, there's obviously wider implications for studying obesity in China other than recognizing that many of the Chinese middle class up-and-coming are becoming obese and therefore unhealthy. So I guess the question would become, why should our listeners, which are mostly made up of global marketers, brand managers, and ad executives, care about the lifestyle changes going on in China today? Are there some opportunities for companies outside of China without necessarily capitalizing on the negative side, but maybe to support a more healthy lifestyle, or maybe some other positive things that outside companies could bring into an opportunity such as you described?
Oh, I think so, definitely. I mean, one thing to remember about China is that the cycles, things happen very, very fast. Cycles move very, very fast. So, you know, although China has moved very quickly into this position of people having enough money to get themselves to lose control of their diet and to become obese, it's also very likely that they're going to start to become concerned about that quite quickly. And we're already starting to see people look at alternative sort of ways of doing things, alternative ways of controlling their diet. So it has been a growing market for sort of gyms and fitness culture. It's also there's also a growing niche market for organic foods and green foods, if you like. I mean, partly I should say, I mean, I know that your listeners will also I've read a lot of stories coming out of China about food scandals, tainted food scares, and mm-hmm. people getting poisoned. Again, in this one-child policy and so on, people are very concerned about food security. So the idea that a food might be organic, as well as hopefully being, you know, healthier and better for them, they're also hoping that that also might just be a guarantee of security, a guarantee of safety as well. So there are those opportunities, and they sometimes overlap.
So this is a rather vicious cycle of getting the kids and the families fat and putting them on a weight loss program at the gyms for $19.95 a month or however much that costs. That's kind of a sad round and round thing that we have to go with there. I had a question about the food. You know, we have, and we mentioned this before, we have organic food. We have the opportunity to eat healthy. It's there. It sits on the shelf. But is that the same case in China, that it's more costly and people just really don't want to spend the money for it?
There are a number of problems. I mean, I should say, and you might disagree with me, gentlemen, but I should say that the one thing America and China have in common is that relative to the amount of money people have and international levels, food is inexpensive to a certain level. You may disagree with me in America, but my experience whenever I go to America is I'm always amazed at how cheap food is coming from originally from Europe.
Sure.
So that, of course, allows you to sort of, and again, you know, this is a middle-class problem in China. So like most Americans and like a growing number of people in China, the ability to push the cart around the supermarket and not worry too much about what's going in there and all those little goodies and everything not being a particular problem for you to pay for at the end encourages the problem a little bit. So when we see a bit of inflation in food pricing here, I'm actually not that worried about it. I'd rather the money went through the system back to the farmers who are living on $2 a day at the other mm-hmm. end. So that's one thing. True organic is a little more expensive. It's a little harder to trust here. We don't have very good certification bodies and everything, which is very important, particularly if you're going to advertise the product as organic. You want to be able to prove that it's organic. People are so used to food scandals here, you know, you may have seen them with milk, you may have seen them with other products here, that people really want some evidence, some hard evidence. They're very distrusting of product claims as people have become aware of advertising and, you know, what disreputable advertising and can be like. So, but we are starting to see it emerge, as I say, partly because, you know, people want to spend their money on the one child. Now, what's happened over a long period is that people have spent that money in one of the fast food joints, or they've spent it on just sort of more toys and more candies. Now I think that there's a generation of parents coming through who, many of them, of course, will have been one child themselves, so they understand a lot more the problems with spoiling and the problems with, you know, devoting so much income to one child. That they may think slightly differently. So I think attitudes are about to change. We're almost on the sort of cusp of a fairly major revolution, I think, in thinking on this sort of thing.
On the Advertising Show, Ray Shillins, Brad Forsyth out of Shanghai, co-author of the book Fat China. His name is Paul French. We'll continue our conversation momentarily here at the Advertising Show. Glad you're with us here at the Advertising Show. Ray Shillins, Brad Forsyth, and out of Shanghai this weekend, it's Fat China co-author Paul French with Ray and Brad here at the Advertising Show. We're talking about healthy food and healthy eating as well, Paul. And one of the chapters in your book talks about China's beer belly. This is rather interesting. It says alcoholic drinks, China's beer belly. Obviously, the kids aren't consuming this stuff, so the adults are lifting a few, how you say, Qingtao, or however that's pronounced. Is that becoming a big problem, not only from a weight standpoint, but from an alcoholism standpoint as well?
Well, not so much from alcoholism, because most of the beer, there's a big growth in beer. There's also growth in wine and spirits, but most of it's being consumed with food. You know, mm-hmm. food is, the restaurant is the sort of equivalent of the pub or the bar in Chinese society. It's where everyone meets and gets together. So, and a lot of the food is quite spicy, and there's a lot of, you know, you're mixing meat with fish and all sorts of things. So beer is the sort of perfect accompaniment, something that's not too hard on the palate. Is just right, but they're not just drinking Qingdao. Though there are a lot of good local beers, they're drinking good old Budweiser. They're drinking everything.
How funny!
And they're now drinking officially. To give you an idea of how much beer they are drinking, they're now drinking more beer than the Germans.
Oh, really? Wow. Interesting. Go ahead, Brad.
Yeah. And by the way, I just returned from Europe, Paul, and I must say I'm reminded every time I go how expensive food is over there, and I think most Americans lose sight of that, how cheap food is in America, and as you point out, in China. If you're eating fresh fruit, it's coming from across a sea in another country. It's not like in America where we have an abundance of fresh fruit and vegetables grown right there. But shifting gears for a moment, Paul, with over 400 mega shopping malls emerging in China, I understand that shopping malls have become the theme parks of China. And I would like for you to describe the atmosphere one might see in a Chinese mall today.
Well, a good, successful Chinese mall will be a big place. It'll be a very big place, and it'll be crowded, usually with families. Now, not everyone will be shopping. A lot of people will be there. Young people will be there on a date. I mean, a lot of your listeners in America, I'm sure, will be shocked to hear that good old Pizza Hut have a very successful business over here, which on a weekend in the evenings will have a velvet rope outside to allow young teenagers on dates to go in there. It's a hot date place. It's a nice, it's good service, very clean, very hygienic. And, you know, as someone who really experienced Pizza Hut primarily through China, to go to a Pizza Hut in America was a little bit of a shock for me, actually. It's a somewhat different concept over there.
I understand. Oh, please, go ahead.
And it will be busy with families who in the winter will be enjoying the heating and in the summer will be enjoying the air conditioning. And it will become a place of leisure. I mean, China, it's only been, you know, it's been less than a decade since China ended the sort of formal six-day week. So all of a sudden people have money in their pocket. You know, families get together and they're not exactly sure what to do with their leisure time. They don't have a lot of, they don't have a lot of hobbies yet. That sort of side of things hasn't really emerged. So, you know, 30 years ago, we used to talk about the emergence of Japan as a leisure time superpower, as a leisure superpower, and what this would mean in terms of a lot of selling a lot of different things and introducing people. And we found, of course, that the Japanese were hobby crazy, that they became obsessive about things. I think we're just starting to see that in China, where people suddenly found themselves with some money and some time, places like shopping malls to go, and that's exactly what they're doing. So shopping has become the leisure time activity, you know, of most people. And they're there, and there are, most shopping malls will come with large multiplex cinemas. They will come with large, you know, popular cheap karaoke places where whole families can go along and sing badly along to along to records.
That's,
and they'll be
bad.
Teeming, quite chaotic, but great fun food halls with every kind of food imaginable, really.
You know, I would think that most would think of even major markets in China as having a more marketplace kind of environment and not this mall situation that you described. So this shift away from the traditional mom-and-pop type shopping outlets to this larger mall outlet shopping, I'm wondering, many Chinese, I would imagine, are experiencing promotions and retail marketing for the first time.
Yes, they are. You know, sometimes that can be very confusing for them. But chain retailing has caught on very quickly. I mean, and chains have been moving in very, very fast. In fact, just today, just this week, we've got the first opening here in Shanghai of The Gap. They're just opening, and they're coming in with special limited edition jeans just for the Chinese market. And they've priced them. Again, I think many Americans will be surprised at how much things sometimes cost here. It is quite expensive. They're pricing these jeans at a very lucky number, 888, 3/8 renminbi, 8 being a very lucky number in Chinese. I mean, that's about $130. Well, I thought that's quite high. I popped on the Gap online website, and I thought they're doing the limited edition in America for $60.
$60. How about 1995, Paul?
But really, that's not unusual. Another brand that's doing incredibly well here at the moment is Apple. I mean, Apple has got this sort of perfect storm of having great products that the market really wants here, of opening these wonderful new stores that look really state-of-the-art, at the same time that there's enough people in cities like Shanghai and Beijing who have had a couple of cheap Chinese-made design sort of computers and now have enough money and want to trade up to Apple. And they're doing incredibly well, but this has to be one of the most expensive countries in the world to buy an iPod or an Apple Mac.
Wow.
You know, before we let you go, I would like to make a comment and then one final question. I must say, and I know I'm not alone in this regard, the opening and closing ceremonies for the Summer Olympics in Beijing a few years back, whatever it was. Yeah, it was so impressive. And it just, I think, showed the world a different side of China, of what we had all become to know China as, and that thought was pretty much stuck in the past. And I can't say enough about how well that was pulled off. But as you have moved there 15 years ago to today, what was the most difficult, challenging part about getting acclimated to living in China for you, Paul? I hear your accent. It sounds, I'm going to guess, British.
Yeah, I am. I'm originally a Londoner. I mean, I originally came here in the 80s as a language student. I sort of came back here in the 90s. I think that the one big difference that people will find is everyone, of course, is very impressed with the Chinese ability to marshal resources and get things done. And you know, whether it be building a shopping mall or a new skyscraper or doing a closing ceremony for the Olympics, they're very, very good at that. Things get done, and everyone jumps into the cause. Where China is not proving so good and where things are a little difficult for us in terms of as a customer and as trying to develop retail businesses and service industries is just service standards. You know, the hardware of sort of building the hotel, China's excellent at. Training up the staff to do good customer service, the sort of thing that really, to be honest, you know, I mean, now, you know, in America, you would really just take for granted. But even now, in certainly in Japan, but in Singapore or Hong Kong, in this region, people would take for granted. In Europe, you know, you would hopefully take for granted. I know coming from Britain, I'm on weak ground when we talk about a good service culture. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the sort of thing that we would take for granted in restaurants, in shops, in hotels and so on, is taking a lot longer to sort of embed that culture here. So the weakness in and also that middle class, those people with money, are starting to have very high standards for service. You know, they have money, they have position in society, and they want to be served well. They want to be made to feel special when they go into stores. That has not been traditionally how things have done here, and that is proving a lot more difficult than building the shopping mall or the hotel complex. You know, it's the actual service standard and embedding that as people's way of doing things.
Well, Paul, there's so much more to talk about. Unfortunately, we are out of time. So I guess the best thing to do would be to go get the book, okay? Fat China, How Expanding Waistlines Are Changing a Nation. You'll be interested to see a lot of stuff that we didn't have the opportunity to touch on today. But, Paul, great book. Write more and continue to do the great things you do there.
Thank you very much, and greetings from tomorrow.
Thank you very much. Hello, Thursday. From the other side of the world, it's Paul French here with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth on The Advertising Show. We'll be back with more in just a moment. Stay right here. Thanks again to Paul French, our special guest here at The Advertising Show today, author of The Fat China, How Expanding Waistlines Changing a Nation. So very interesting to hear that around the world, things are pretty much the same as we have here in our backyard as well. So they've got some unusual things that go along with that as far as advertising and such, but quite interesting. So, Fat China, go get that book. We've got John Gersma, who has been a guest of The Advertising Show with another book, but he's got a brand new one out. He's the co-author of Spend Shift. And it really details what they did as a road trip, and they talked to a whole bunch of people and really did a great job of putting together the various aspects of why ideals and thoughts have changed around the United States and how people are coping with the ups and downs of our economy and such, and business as it relates to retailers and consumers. So that's next week on The Advertising Show. We missed earlier this week, it was Conan. Back on television, but Brad, did you see that Conan is also an American Express spokesperson now? I thought that was rather interesting.
Yeah. I missed that.
I actually have not seen the commercial on television. I did watch it on YouTube. Basically, they brought him back in American Express. He didn't want to do it, and he said, and he finally read the script, and it's a great ad. And so now he's back on and doing that, and I think it's probably probably a good connection for American Express, kind of a fresh approach as well. So It's good stuff.
Have you seen the spots?
Oh, yeah. Oh, they're incredible. They're absolutely incredible. They'll probably win an award or may have already won an award somewhere around the world for what has been put together here.
Hey, you know, before I forget, next week I'm going to share a story about Lufthansa Airlines, which is something I experienced recently. It has to do with, I guess, my consumer brand experience, and it's all very favorable, very positive, and I want to wait and share that at the front end of one of our upcoming shows, maybe next week, week after. But it was an extremely favorable experience.
Lufthansa, yeah. Were you flying coach or first class or what?
Well, it was coach, but it felt like first class. It's one hell of an airline. If you haven't flown a German national airline, say national German-based international airline, it is a different experience than what us Americans are accustomed to.
More than peanuts. What a concept. I like that. The Advertising Show. I'll be interested to hear about that. The Advertising Show is being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine, and you can visit them online at adage.com. Hope you enjoyed the show today, and hope you'll come back next week for lots more here. The Advertising Show, a copyrighted Big Radio Midgets production with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsythe, and we'll talk to you next week.
Why do more media professionals read iwantmedia.com? iwantmedia.com features reports from industry leaders and media personalities. iwantmedia.com gives you quick access to news, stats, trade orgs, and industry publications, and it's updated daily. Forbes says iwantmedia.com contains everything media professionals need to stay ahead of the game. The Washington Post calls it the source for the serious media geek. Do you get it? If you don't, you should. To sign up for free daily email alerts, visit iwantmedia.com.